You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 337 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live on this fine Monday evening. The Hawks are back in action today, as you're listening to this, on Tuesday, but an off day on Monday in between games, and that leads us to a trade deadline-only edition of the podcast. One big thing on the pod today was that the entire Locked On Podcast Network is doing a sort of mock trade deadline. If you are a listener to the Dunked On podcast, you would note that those guys do a mock trade deadline a couple of weeks ago in three parts. It was a lot of fun to witness where they kind of break down the entire league and execute the entire thing. The Locked On Network has the benefit of having a host for every single team, so I am operating as the GM of sorts of the Atlanta Hawks, and we came to an agreement actually on a trade on Monday with the Cleveland Cavaliers. So I actually have recorded some crossover audio with Chris Manning of the Locked On Cavs podcast to talk about that deal, and then after that, we'll come back and talk a little bit more about some of the reporting that was out there today on the entire Hawks makeup. So we're going to lead with this first thing with a trade that was, you know, quote unquote consummated. This is, I should remind you, it's not a real trade. This is a fake trade that we're analyzing after coming to an agreement on it. So obviously I liked it enough to do it for the Hawks side, and I'll come back and talk about that a little bit more after the fact, and then we'll get into some more buzz stuff and some of the rumor mill. So here is that breakdown with Chris Manning of Locked On Cavs podcast.
Hi, I am Chris Manning from Locked On Cavaliers.
And I'm Brad Rowland from Locked On Hawks.
So as part of the lead up to the NBA trade deadline, we are going to do a little mock trade. Some of the other podcasts are doing this as well, but Brad and I came to an agreement. The deal would send Dwayne Dedmon, the center, from Atlanta to Cleveland for Amon Shumpert, the Cavs' 2018 first-round draft pick with no protections, which was a sticking point in negotiations for a minute there, and then the 2020, I believe, Miami Heat second-round pick that the Cavs own. Brad, we'll start with you on this. Why was this, the offer I made to you, acceptable for Dedmon?
It's interesting. I think Dedmon is a player that is, very interesting, very positive in a lot of ways. But, sort of the expectation, at least on my end and for a lot of people in Atlanta, is that he's going to opt out. He has a player option for next year. And if he's going to plan on doing that, which I think everybody kind of assumes that he will, you know, that makes him an expiring contract. And for a team like the Hawks that isn't really going anywhere this season, you know, that kind of makes him a pretty expendable piece. Obviously, you know, taking on Shumpert's contract is not exactly ideal, but, you know, the Hawks are in the market for assets, and Shump's contract is only one more season. And, by all means, I can't imagine the Hawks trying to compete next year. So taking on that money to get that extra asset in the first round pick kind of makes sense. And then to sort of sweeten it a little bit more with that future second rounder, because as you well know, the Cavs don't have a whole lot of second round assets in the next couple of years. They've kind of mortgaged those in attempts to stay relevant recently. But I think that's sort of the balancing act there, because I'm not sure that, you know, the first round pick is quite enough to offset Chump's money for next year when you factor in that Dedmon's obviously a positive asset now, but it sort of bridges the gap with that extra asset. And, for the Hawks, looking forward versus now, it kind of makes sense for them.
From my end of this, I think some people will say, why did you give up a first-round pick for Dwayne Dedmon? And I will say this. I'm under the – if I was the Cavs' front office, I would be working in the reality that I think you have to – considered going as far in as you can on LeBron this year. Now I think the Nets pick is its own category of asset, but I think with this first round pick for next year, it's in all likelihood going to be a late first round. Brad may know better than me, but from what I've read, that doesn't seem like that's going to be a real hot spot for the draft. And yes, you can get your Kyle Kuzmas and that type of guy then, but that is not the norm. That is the abnormal pick you get late in the first round. When I look at Dedmon, he's in the prime of his career. I don't really mind that he can opt out of his contract because based on what we know from how the Cavs are approaching this, they don't want to take on any long-term money. He's a good rim protector, something the Cavs desperately need, and he's hitting threes this year. And Brad, you can speak to how real it is compared to more than I can, but looking at his basketball reference page, 1.8 attempts per game, he's shooting 38.3%. And even if he can do that occasionally, I feel good about a guy that can protect the rim, is athletic, and can maybe play 15, 20 minutes a night, especially compared to the other options out there. When you look at trading for DeAndre Jordan, when you look at acquiring Nerlens Noel, I feel much better about Dedmon, not just in terms of what he does, but on price point as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure that 38% is real with Dedmon. And obviously before this year, he was not really a three-point shooter at all. But, you know, just looking at his stroke and, you know, talking to people around the Hawks, they think it is real. They saw something on tape somewhere and were encouraged and basically encouraged him to step out and do that. And he looks very smooth doing it. The shot looks like it's a shot that would be an effective jumper, even though it was sort of a secondary thing when the Hawks acquired him. So, yeah, I think the shooting is real. And, you know, the rim protection is definitely real as well. And he's mobile. He's able to sort of play in space a little bit. He's not this you know, fantastic athlete, but he's not a guy who's a complete stiff either. He can certainly help the Cavs. And listen, I mean, he's, for my money, the best at least of the guys who are on the market, the best asset the Hawks have to trade right now, because they have a couple of other expiring contracts, but Dedmon is the best player of those guys. And you know, the Hawks should certainly look to market him as, because of just where they are in the calendar, but at the same time, he's a very good player.
Some context on this hypothetical trade. Per some reporting that we saw come on Monday, we know that three teams are interested in Dwayne Dedmon, that one of them is not the Cavs. That doesn't mean they're not, but per the Sporting News, the Thunder, the Bucks, who have since acquired Tyler Zeller, and the 76ers have all expressed some interest in Dedmon. The Cavs also already owe a first-round pick to the Atlanta Hawks. It is 1-10 protected, I believe, in 2019. So, yes. And I believe it turns into second-round picks after that.
It's one more year. I think it's 2019 and 2020. They're both top 10 protected, and it turns into seconds after 2020.
So LeBron's future has a lot to say about what that's going to look like going forward, depending on what he does and then what the Cavs decide to do in a post-LeBron world. If not, that pick certainly is going to convey next season. But this is another first-round pick the Cavs will owe Atlanta. I think if you look at what other options are out there for the Cavs, and let's look exactly at Atlanta. One of the versions of this deal Brad and I talked about was the Cavs getting Marco Bellinelli and giving up a little bit and giving up Channing Frye's expiring. I was very hesitant to do that, and maybe that's redundant considering you have Dedmon coming in. But I want to keep Frye right now with the injury to Kevin Love, just because I don't trust playing Ante Cizic, and I don't really think Bellinelli helps the Cavs that much. And some of the other people wondered, okay, could the Cavs get Kent Bazemore? The money on a Kent Bazemore to Cleveland deal, especially because I don't know how willing the Cavs would be to take on Bazemore's salary if LeBron were to leave, considering, you know, Dan Gilbert doesn't want to pay the tax and all of that. I think that's a bit harder to do, and then you're just starting to match salary, and the Cavs don't have any short-term salary as high as Bazemore. So to me, Bazemore just seems like an unrealistic thing for these two teams to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's not. I mean, he would help the Cavs in a lot of ways, but at the same time, taking on 2 years and $37 million after this year for Bazemore is a risk, to be sure. Like, if you didn't have LeBron, you would not want that contract on your books. And I'm actually a huge defender of Kent. I think he's a very useful and good player that just happens to be slightly overpaid. But at the same time, if you go into a rebuilding mode like the Cavs almost certainly will, if they lose LeBron, you do not want to have Bazemore under contract necessarily. And, you know, you could probably come to a deal that included, you know, Frye and Shump, something like that, to get to Bazemore. But I'm just not sure what kind of traction that would actually get. So I think that makes more sense. Short-term money, less risk for the Cavs. And on the Hawks side, I think the impetus to get rid of Bazemore isn't quite as strong as he is playing well right now. And, you know, there's no reason for the Hawks to sort of take it on the head necessarily to get rid of Bazemore right now. They don't need to be paying assets to get rid of him, because they're in that place where next year this cap space doesn't really mean all that much to them. You know, the Hawks do have three first round picks already, so this would be four first round picks for the Hawks plus their own second round picks. So they basically would have five of the top, you know, 35 picks. Which I know is a kind of a weird reality when you're setting in talking about the Hawks, but if you're Travis Schlenk, you probably just want a bunch of swings, and you have some assets to move up and down the draft. You want to do that too. So I understand probably Hawks fans will be recoiling a little bit at having five of the top 35 necessarily, but I think it's probably the best way to add assets and add capital, and that's probably the best way to do that.
We'll wrap it up on this, Brad. Let's say in a vacuum, the Cavs actually do acquire Dedmon, and whether he's a rental or whether they keep him beyond the season, whether LeBron stays or not, that's down the line. But you look at the next few months of the season with what we know about this Cavs team. How much do you think he actually helps them?
I think he helps them considerably, just because the defensive end of the floor. Obviously, I know you are probably litigating this on a daily basis right now, just how bad the Cavs have been defensively. But, you know, Dedmon's not this like this transcendent defensive player, but I think he's certainly an above average defender at the position, because he is mobile. He protects the rim. He's kind of always in the right place, you know. Especially, and I think he'd be definitely dialed in on a Cavs team, because, you know, he's going from playing with the Hawks with basically no chance at the playoffs to a Cavs team that's in the middle of the playoff race, even though obviously Cleveland isn't playing all that well at the moment. I think you get the best of Dedmon for a small sample. He's playing for a contract, so he has every reason to be dialed in as well. And I think that would be a useful piece. You know, I think it's not like this game-changing piece in a lot of ways, which I'm sure you'll hear about that after the fact. But, you know, 15, 20 minutes, as you mentioned before, at the top of this thing, Dedmon would be a huge asset to the Cavs on the defensive end of the floor. And he doesn't really take anything off the table offensively, too, as long as he shoots like this.
Yeah, that's my thinking behind it as well, that he can provide some needed rim protection. Will certainly help while Kevin Love is out with that hand injury. But the deal, in case you, and just as a refresher, is Dwayne Dedmon from Atlanta to Cleveland for Amon Shumpert, the Cavs' 2018 first-round pick with no protections. I had originally asked for top 20 protections, and then Brad and I were like, yeah, that's not going to work considering everything else going on. And especially, I think, that first-round pick that the Cavs already owe Atlanta, I think, is a big reason why Brad was not willing to take protections. And then the 2020 second-round pick from Miami. Let us know if you like that deal. You can tweet at me, at CWMWrites, and at LockedOnCavs. You can tweet at Brad at
BT Roland and at Locked On Hawks.
And the deadline's going to be nuts. Maybe this will happen, maybe it won't, but just consider this one option as we get closer to the deadline.
So without getting too deep into that podcast, and obviously thanks to Chris Manning again for consummating that with me, without getting too deep into that, a couple of more things to hit on in terms of the Hawks side of things. Sort of the debate here would be how much dead money Amon Shumpert actually has. You know, he's making more than $10 million for next season, the 2018-2019 season. If you believe that he is completely dead money, then this deal becomes even less interesting, obviously, because, I mean, the $10 million is enough, honestly, for me to take on the first-round pick. Especially because I don't think Cleveland is going to be picking somewhere in the 29-28 range anymore. I think right now it's sort of a calculated gamble. Cleveland's not playing well. I don't think it's going to fall out of the top 20 necessarily, into the top 20 necessarily. But at the same time, there's a little bit of value in having that pick be somewhere in the 25 range versus the 29 range is where it was probably supposed to be before the season started. So there's something to be said for that. But getting that second asset, that 22nd round pick from the Miami Heat was enough to sort of bridge the gap for me. It's probably worth another $1 million or $2 million or two of salary cap space. So if you factor that in and the $10 plus million of Shumpert, that's it's one of those things where it's probably enough money for me. Dedmon probably could fetch a little bit on his own, of course, right now. But as we get into some of the reporting here from Sean Devaney of the Sporting News that actually hit on Monday, you will realize that maybe the Hawks are not exactly overflowing with options. So it's one of those things where if they can get a deal like this, I think it would probably be wise to pull the trigger on it. I don't think the cap space for next year is necessarily all that important for the Hawks, and that I'm not sure they're going to be in the market to make a big splash. They would still have plenty left over. They still have 20-something million left over. If they want to do another one of these deals to take on some bad salary in exchange for an asset, that's probably what the Hawks should be doing at the moment versus spending in free agency. So this does take away some of their flexibility for next year, but giving them 5 picks in the top 35 would be pretty much an overwhelming amount of assets for the Hawks. And I'm sure they would not necessarily pick 5 guys there. They'd probably do some packaging and maybe go out on the market and try to find somebody that was a young, cost-controlled asset. But still, the more assets, the better for the Hawks, and that is the backdrop of the trade. So that's a long time to talk about a fake deal, so I wanted to move into sort of the real world a little bit here. Sean Devaney, I mentioned before, of the Sporting News, wrote a lot about the Hawks, actually. Basically, the overarching theme is that the Hawks are having a fire sale right now. If they're trying to have a fire sale, it was described to say that the Hawks are, quote, into full-scale sell mode, approaching the deadline on Thursday, with just about everyone on the roster outside of John Collins up for discussion, end quote. That's not a big surprise. We talked about that a lot on the podcast, that basically no one is untouchable. Collins is the closest thing by far, and I think it would be a genuine surprise to everyone involved, including myself, if Collins got traded. But basically anybody else, I guess Prince would be the number two guy on that list if you had to pick another guy to sort of near untouchable status. But given the way that he is sort of scuffled at times this season, it wouldn't be that much of a surprise, I guess, if he was traded, although obviously that would be one of the more eyebrow raising maneuvers. Still sort of the headliners here. Dwayne Dedmon is the what is termed as the most coveted of the Hawks assets by Devaney in this piece. And he actually gives 3 teams. It is the Bucks, who are now off the market, you would imagine, as the Bucks traded for Tyler Zeller on Monday evening. But it was the Bucks, the Sixers, and the Thunder as teams that could be looking at Dwayne Dedmon. Also in that piece, he indicates that it is expected that Dedmon will pass on his player option in search of a new deal. That's not a big surprise. We talked about earlier on the pod, but something that's backed up there by a little bit of reporting from Devaney, who's a respected guy, has been around for a long time, and has some good sources around the league for sure. Beyond that, there was some discussion about Marco Belinelli and Oshelia Sova. With that said, I think it's important to note that the reporting basically says that Belinelli and Ilyasova could be bought out if they are not traded, and as a result of that, teams kind of know that, and I think they're not going to give a whole lot of assets away. I'm pretty sure if the Hawks would take just anything for Ursula Ilyasova, they could probably get rid of him, whereas Belinelli I'm not so sure about, because Belinelli has been such a negative asset this year on the floor that $6 million is not, crazy money, but at the same time, it's tough to get rid of that deal without taking bad salary back, and the Hawks aren't going to do that. So, it's better in their minds to just buy him out, that they probably will do that, but something to keep an eye on there as well, even though the piece notes that, Philadelphia or even Indiana could be looking at Belinelli if the Hawks are just going to take a bad second-round pick probably in exchange for him. The headliners beyond that will be the inclusion of Dennis Schroeder and Kent Bazemore. The Schroeder train, the bandwagon is emptying in just a little bit this season. That's something that I've been monitoring for a while now. But the piece basically indicates that, and I quote, "There is doubt among league executives that Schroeder can be a leader on a playoff team," end quote. And that's basically, also through the prism of the fact that there is, quote, "surprisingly little interest," end quote, in Dennis Schroeder. That's not a big surprise to me. I've talked about that a number of times, that, because Schroeder is making real money for three seasons, a lot of people just want to trade Schroeder just to trade Schroeder, and I'm not sure it's going to be that easy, honestly. There's not a whole lot of takers for him, and because you're really making an investment if you're another team trying to trade for him, it will not be that easy to move off of him, even if that contract isn't necessarily awful on its face. And finally, Kent Bazemore, again, something that we talked about a lot on the podcast in terms of being available on the market, perhaps. The Pelicans apparently have interest in Bazemore, which is not a big surprise, but apparently they want the Hawks to take back Solomon Hill, who is not nearly as good as Kent Bazemore and actually makes not as much money as Kent, but Hill's owed about $26 million over the next two seasons. Baze is owed about $37 million or so. So it's one of those things where I'm not sure that swap makes a lot of sense unless you're getting a real asset in return, because Solomon Hill is not nearly the player that Kent Bazemore is. And, and by the way, the Pelicans don't really have any first-round picks to trade, so it becomes a tougher swap there. But, there's been some, some maneuvering on Bazemore in the reporting, but in this piece from Devaney, he notes that Bazemore, quote, "is not getting much love on the market despite having the most productive season of his career," end quote. And the money quote here actually comes from a league executive that's quoted in the piece. It says, "There are a dozen teams that could use Bazemore, but no one wants to pay him that," end quote. That's the big thing with Bazemore. Obviously, we talked about that a lot, but his contract is just what it is. I mean, I think everybody in the entire league would like to have Kent Bazemore in a vacuum, but not a whole lot of interest to pay him, $18, $19 million a season, and that's the reality of the situation for the Hawks. For me, there's little interest in, if I'm the Hawks, I would not be trying to, give an asset away to get rid of Kent Bazemore. I think Plumlee is the only player on the team that's bad enough salary to really have it be justified to give up an asset to get off that contract. With Bazemore, it's just not worth it right now to do that, because the Hawks, as I mentioned before, and the whole point of having the Dedmon Shumpert trade is the fact that the Hawks don't really need their cap space for next year. So with that as the backdrop, you really wouldn't want to necessarily give up real assets to get off Bazemore. Have him be around. He's a good functional character guy. Can really add to your team as a functional rotation wing at the very least, and he's a helpful piece in that regard. So with all that said, a lot of stuff here on the Hawks and how they're trying to trade. Not necessarily, this is not meaning that they're trying to trade everybody all at once, but it does mean that everybody's available, again, aside from Collins, which none of that is necessarily new information aside from the teams that are drawn to Bazemore and Dedmon specifically, but still, that's worth a read, so check that out for Sean Devaney at the Sporting News. And again, check out the entire Locked On Podcast Network to check out all of the mock trade deadline stuff. If you're a big nerd about this stuff like I am, you will definitely enjoy that around the network. And please give me some feedback on the trade that I executed with Chris. Locked On Hawks on Twitter, Locked On on Facebook, and as well as my personal Twitter feed at BT Roland. If you have any reaction to that, I'd love to hear about it, and please share that with me. So enjoy the rest of your day, everybody. We will come back with a live recording live from Phillips Arena on Tuesday evening as the Hawks take on the Grizzlies. So we'll definitely be covering that game, and that'll be the Wednesday show. So stay tuned for that. Enjoy the rest of your day. Subscribe to the podcast, do all that fun stuff, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.